This episode is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy!
It is the Chicagoverse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists in industry and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
Dynasty Podcasts, live from Dynasty Studios in Pilsen. Haima Black, and I am here with a first-time guest on the podcast, Anna Russet. Am I saying your last name
Russet.
Correctly? Russet, okay.
But that's what everybody says when they first meet me.
That's okay. Everybody calls me Jamie, so...
Oh, no.
Yeah. but you are somebody who I'm glad we have on tonight because you and I were talking a while back about, you know, maybe doing some panels and doing this and that the way that you do, and you know, people get busy.
Life.
But now we're able to...
Glad it worked out. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for coming up tonight. So with this podcast, we like to tell the story of, you know, people who are doing cool creative work in Chicago.
Yeah.
And when people are on for the first time, we kind of always start at the beginning. So for you, how did, you know, becoming a creative and choosing this path kind of start in your life?
Whew, I think like it depends on how far back we go. But I mean, definitely my parents' influence. My parents are both artists and graphic designers. And they have always been really encouraging to me since like a young age to like, we always had Mac computers. They always had, you know, Photoshop or Cork, if anyone remembers Cork. But that's like what I kind of was raised on. And I've always been somebody who's really loved computers and the internet. Ever since I had access, like around like probably 12 years old, I've been an early adapter to whatever is out there, from role-playing forums to MySpace to...
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have the sidekick?
I didn't. That was a little bit before my time.
Okay, yeah.
But
I
was like, you know, I probably would have loved it.
the sidekick was like, they could make iPhones for the next 70 years and they're never going to make a cooler phone than the sidekick.
See, I had like the whatever free Verizon phone was.
Okay. Was it a flip?
It was a flip for a while, but then it turned into like one of those chocolate slidey things.
Oh, yeah,
do you know?
Yeah.
Do you remember those? Like the aqua blue chocolate LG. And then I finally convinced my mom to let me get an iPhone when I moved here into Chicago, actually, in 2012.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been a minute. But I mean, I've always been like an early adopter. I've loved technology and the internet. And I, when social media first came around, social media or YouTube specifically, I immediately got on there and just started making videos of myself and my life in like small town Fort Wayne, Indiana. And from there, things just kind of spiraled. You know, back like 2008, 2010, that period of time on the internet, everything was kind of sans algorithm.
Right.
And the
it was the wild, wild west, really. Yeah.
It is. And it was beautiful because the front page of YouTube was all creators. It wasn't ESPN. It wasn't Jimmy Kimmel. It wasn't all these fucking people paying to... Can I cuss on here?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I was like, I always forget where I'm at. But okay, so like all of like these places have completely changed over the past like decade.
Absolutely.
But when I first got started, people were able to find each other. And that was awesome. That was why I loved social media so much. That's why I like spent all my time there. And I just started gaining people. And then Instagram popped up and I brought all of my people from YouTube all over to Instagram. And I've grown an audience over 170,000 now. And I have created content for brands. I have worked, you know, in more of a traditional ad setting. I worked at Havas Chicago for the past 5 years. Went from intern to creative director, which is wild and very formative. And I left in January to pursue my own independent work, and it's been great. It's been weird.
So there's so much I want to pick apart in there, and I want to talk about your accomplishments, but I'm also equally just, I'm very interested and curious about your thoughts on social media, kind of then versus, and I know that could be a nine-hour
it's loaded.
Podcast, but like, I guess, you know, surface level, just kind of like, how do you feel about where social media is now for creators, for consumers, you know, the industry of it, all these things versus, you know, what it was like in 2008 when you're right, like YouTube and Google and Twitter, all these things were new and it was the wild, wild west. And it was so much easier to like, in my opinion, I think find community and connection in a lot of ways.
I agree. I mean, I think, well, if we look back at that time period, there wasn't the sort of advertising element yet. Like there wasn't the sort of like profitable part of social media just quite yet. I mean, that quickly happened. And since then, you know, we've seen Facebook go from an organic space to a pay-to-play space.
to destroying the election.
Just like a place where we should all leave.
Just Nazi haven, yeah.
Yeah, horrible. And I have a lot of thoughts about this, but I right now at this current state, I am pretty upset where social media is. I do think we have, like, I think there's a glimmer of hope to kind of change paths and to pivot where we're going. We have the technology to make this space incredible.
Right.
And I know that because I experienced it in the beginning.
Yeah.
It was all there. Like, and because our generation had the experience of being able to live through that time of, like, before the algorithm, like that couple of years, mm-hmm. like, because I've experienced that, I think I can now have the sort of mindset to change that for the future. And I worry about younger generations who are growing up kind of in this app only, like, walled garden world, mm-hmm. and not having the sort of experience that I did with a computer, where I learned how to torrent, where I learned how to steal shit, I learned how to code. Like, I did that because I had a computer and I got to figure it out myself. And you can't do that with phones.
No, and it was so much more, you know, not just to be like, oh, things were always better back then. But it's like, I feel like there was a lot more authenticity and a lot more, yeah, communication. Now, again, before we, so I want to get into, like, some of the things you're doing, mm-hmm. but, like, with social media, do you think, let's say, you know, a kid's 9 years old right now, do you think that kid's going to grow up and want to be on Facebook and Twitter? Or do you think the kids that are 5, 9, 15 right now are going to develop some kind of other network or mm-hmm. other destination in a digital space, whatever that is, that isn't what we consider social media?
Definitely. Like, well, I think, first of all, I think Facebook will be a space kind of almost like a birth certificate. Like, sadly,
yeah.
I think that a lot of kids that I've spoken to who are younger have a Facebook from their parents making it for them. So it's kind of almost just this, like, default, I have a social security number, I have a Facebook
are
account.
Are you real? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They might not inhabit it in the same way that we do now. But I think a lot of kids, especially around 9 years old, are on YouTube and they're on TikTok. Like, that's kind of where it's at right now.
TikTok's a big one.
Yeah. But I do think that, I mean, I think years from now, this space will look completely different. I do think we are in a pivotal time, and I'm excited for that.
I agree. I miss when social media was fun, and I miss when I felt like there was a lot more community conversation with your own people versus you post the slightest opinion, like, I think I need more napkins. And suddenly, like, people are like, we are going to kill your grandma.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no...
I know. There's no in between.
There's no middle space. All right. So I was just kind of curious your thoughts on some social stuff, really surface level. Mm-hmm. But in your story, like, how do you go from being in Fort Wayne, Indiana, being this younger kid who loves the internet to, you know, landing at a space like Havas and then moving up the ranks? Because that's obviously a very notable, respected, you know, institution in the marketing world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, like, I've always had that tendency. I remember growing up in Fort Wayne and I love where I'm from, but I remember having this moment where I was, like, watching Nickelodeon and, like, they would be, like, asking for, like, casting calls, but it said you had to be in LA or Florida. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, holy sh, why do we live in Indiana? Why did we move here? And then I remember, like, as I was growing older,
Mom and Dad, why did we live somewhere where we can't
continually, like, asking them that
on a Nickelodeon show?
Sorry, Mom.
Why was that not the number one stipulation when you put down the money for the mortgage?
I was like, I do not understand.
Yeah.
And then growing up, I wanted to be a magazine editor. And mm-hmm. so I'm following magazines like Nylon or Teen Vogue, and I'm reaching out. I started, like, cold calling, or basically cold emailing, as I think Chuck will probably talk about in his story. But I did a similar thing where I would email, like, the editor in chief of Nylon as, like, a 15-year-old saying, like, listen, what do I have to do to get to where you are? And I think I realized, you know, it's hard in Indiana to do that. But once social media came, I was able to turn the camera on myself in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and make it happen. And that's one thing I love about social media, that I want to keep about social media. Like, a lot of YouTubers and influencers move to LA or New York because they feel like that's where it is. But to be honest, I think there's, like, such a cool opportunity to be able to stay in the city that you love and make it happen for yourself there.
This studio, we're in my studio that I built in my apartment in Pilsen. And, you know, like, this works. Like, we can do this here. I didn't have to go to Brooklyn or LA, which are great places, but, like, yeah, I completely agree that the internet, I think, has made it so that you don't have to be in a certain locale. Obviously, it can help in certain instances. But
it,
like,
helps based on what your goals are.
Right,
like, I think it depends on, like, if you want to go towards the more Hollywood mainstream sort of route. I just don't think that's exciting. I really don't. I think that this is exciting, that I can produce whatever I want and I can say whatever I want and put it on the internet on my own without anyone like being a gatekeeper.
Right.
I mean, definitely that dream has been a little distorted due to like YouTube demonetizing people and all the other drama that's going on in these spaces. But I still think it's a more viable place to kickstart your career if you are somebody that maybe typically Hollywood wouldn't like put on air.
Sure. So currently you are, you know, you said that you kind of went off on your own to do your own thing in the content production space. Talk about kind of what that looks like. You know, what are your goals with that? What kind of content are you creating for yourself and for, you know, brands or sponsors?
Yeah, it's definitely evolved over the past decade. I think in the beginning it was more of like I was really interested in photography. I went to school for fine art photography and learned that technically through film as well as digital. So it was more of like a place for me to share my work at first. And then as time went on, I really enjoyed sharing my perspectives on the world and how I live my life and my ideas about imagery and media and advertising. And so nowadays, I think like a lot of my content is really trying to bring back this sort of authenticity or vulnerability to social media without necessarily like completely selling it out in a weird way. Because it's weird, like my algorithm now, or at least like, it's like so hard to talk about it because it's such a black box, but I think my algorithm now is like prioritizing and celebrating the sort of like vulnerable content because it's heavily engaged with.
Right.
But I don't want that to determine how I create content. Like, I don't want the algorithm to kind of encourage me in a certain way.
Sure. No, because then you're just chasing trends.
Exactly.
And that's always a losing proposition.
So it's like, how do I make sure that like I'm bringing this real part of myself to this channel without like necessarily just catering to what the algorithm wants me to do?
Yeah. I think that's a big question for a lot of content producers in general right now, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're going up against like, you know, being shadow banned or not being seen or, you know, like just all these things that in a perfect world, creators wouldn't have to worry about. They could just put their content out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, for you, what do you think has been, obviously, like, you're successful at what you do. You have this success story in social media, and you've had a lot of accomplishments working, you know, like you mentioned in the agency world, working with clients on the agency side and independently. What do you think you have done right that maybe others have not been able to accomplish in the social space? Because it's tricky.
It is tricky. And I mean, like, it's a combination of things. Like, to be honest, it's a lot about timing and luck, like, first of all. Like, that is all a part of the equation. But, I mean, I think a lot of it has been just me not wanting to do, like, what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
I guess. Like, I have in a degree. Like, I went to school. I felt like I had to do that. Take out the loans. You do it. Whatever.
Right.
But for a lot of things, especially, like, even my time at Havas was built around me being guaranteed that I'm going to be able to be who I want to be and do what I want to do. Like, I had a boss who said that it was mandatory for me to keep up my social following and all my work while I was there and to prioritize that alongside client work. And that's, I mean, especially at the time that I was hired about like 5 years ago, that was unheard of. Like, your employer would never allow you to take that time.
I remember I worked at a radio station here called Q101, and I would tell them about social media. I mean, this is so old, but it's like, I would tell them we need to be on MySpace, and I, you know, Twitter came along, and I was like, we need to be on Twitter. And I was the first one to create a, like a social profile for any part of the radio station whatsoever for the show that I worked on, and nobody took it seriously.
Right.
They really thought that I was like, you guys, the pretend internet's here, we should be on this. And they're like, we're a multi-million dollar radio station. We don't need the fucking internet.
Oh my
you
God,
know?
I know.
And now it's like, yeah, but you're right. Like, it wasn't always taken seriously.
Right.
Now,
and
of course, it's the
so
only
much.
Thing that anyone cares about.
Like, it's crazy within the past year, even 5 years has gone by where there's now, I will go on LinkedIn and I can see like a ton of different opportunities for content creators and social media managers. 5 years ago, oh my God, that was like unheard of. I feel like I didn't have that.
No, there wasn't any of that.
No, and now there's a bunch of it. But I think there is the difference between people who walk the walk and truly like know social media versus people who will read about it and can talk about it and theorize about it.
Well, sure, you could read, there's a billion guides, there's Social Media Week, there's South by Southwest. You can consume all the tutorials in the world, but it's like if you don't have an authentic, meaningful connection there or anything meaningful to say, then, you know, all the best, you know, times to post in the world is not going to mean anything.
That's like, that is a question people often ask me, like, when's the best time to post? And it's like, I have so many questions before that I need to ask you, like, why are you doing what you're doing? Who's your audience? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really funny. I teach a podcasting class and the first question almost every person who takes the class asks me is they're like, how do I make money doing this? And I'm like, you don't have a podcast yet. You don't have to worry about that. That's like a way later question. And also you don't.
Well, that's like, I think that's also the thing I hear when people ask me, like, how do I get followers? Because it's not about the follower. Like, if I would have went into social media thinking that, like, this shit wouldn't have never happened.
Sure, of course.
I was playing around, experimenting, and, you know, a lot about timing and luck again. But it's been this obsessively fun thing for me up until this point that has led me to this point.
Well, and I think that people, you know, have really connected with you and your presence and your story online because you're authentic. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, that's my impression.
I do. I feel like I have a tendency over oversharing, and that's just, like, always been me.
But and people connect to that. There's a real, I think right now we're at a point, at least in my opinion, where I think that there's a lot of people who are kind of done with the fake, super, just, you know, Kardashian. And I have a lot of respect for the Kardashians, but, like, just the Kardashian type of content where, like, everything is so super perfect.
Right.
Now I think people want something a lot more real.
Well, in a way, I do think, like, is that me?
That's me. That's embarrassing.
I was like, oh no, is that
that's
me?
Me being like, I've never done this before.
You're so popular. I don't know. I feel like I've been kind of hesitant when I use the word fake or real because it's all real. Like, and I think that's something we have to be a lot more real about. Like,
sure.
Kardashian shit's real. They're killing it. Good job for you.
They are killing it.
But the real implication of that and the real ramifications of promoting diet teas and diet suckers, like, and body
flat
images that are
tea,
unrealistic.
Sure.
Like, that's more of like, okay, let's talk about that reality. It's not fake. And I get why people call it fake. And I've even called it that too. But the digital world is as real as our physical world. And we need to start treating it as such.
This is getting very Matrix.
I know.
It really is.
It's
love
my
it.
Entire life. I swear.
So for you now, as an independent content producer, as a creator, as your own brand, you know, who's an ideal client? What's an ideal kind of project? What are you looking for if somebody wanted to pitch you?
These days, I am looking for any sort of company or nonprofit that is trying to make the world a better place in a real way.
Sure.
Usually a smaller organization. I find that organizations that are too large usually compromise something along the way, whether it be ethics and how they treat their employees, how they make their product. It just shouldn't be that way. But I tend to like to work with nonprofits and especially companies that are supporting women and like queer people. For instance, I got to work with a company that it's a startup and they provide access to birth control for women who might not have the financial means to get it or even like the sort of like doctor's office to go to. Mm-hmm. They deliver it directly to your door and I got to promote that on my Instagram and get paid for it. And that is kind of the most ideal work that I could do right now in this sort of like influencer world.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's so many companies now where it's like every day it's being revealed that there's so many companies that are doing such. I mean, companies have always done unethical things. That's not new. But now it's at a different level. Like it was revealed that like Wayfair was like, what, like providing beds for the, you know, child concentration camps. And it's like, that's pretty bad. That's pretty fucked up. You know? Like,
right. Well, I think like this is something that we see a lot with corporations today is that guilt is easily displaced because of how big it's become. Like, you know, the CMO can point to someone else and say, well, actually, that's not my job. It was their job. So I'm like, you know, excused from that.
Blameless.
It's constantly the blame is put onto everyone else so that it no one ever
until
ever feels
it goes to
it.
The intern who's posting on Twitter.
Yeah. And then that's when it blows up. And then they're all like, fuck.
Right. You also have been doing, I've seen these events and like panels and things like that, right? Like talk about, you know, working in that space and what kind of events and conversations you're looking to curate.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of my work right now has evolved into a space of like digital wellness, but not necessarily the sort of like pseudo inspirational, like fake, like sort of supportive network like that we see oftentimes when we think about self-care or wellness. Like I'm really thinking about what we need to create users of social media to turn them more into people who truly understand their rights, how their privacy is being used, how all of that's going down right now because it's such a profitable space and it's moving so quickly. So I'm hosting events like How to Be on Your Phone and Not Hate Everything.
I saw that and I loved the image that was like, it was in a like the flyer is like text message, you know, little bubbles conveying the information of the event.
Thank you.
Which I thought very clever.
Yeah, thank you. I think like, you know, trying to look at a lot of like what I do now is trying to look at these, like, our phones and social media as environments that we live within to really kind of make it more of a personal thing. And I mean, selfishly, even maybe I'm trying to have these events so that I can hear from other people, like, how they're feeling, because I'm not feeling good for the most part. I live my life on social media. I make my money from social media. I can't exactly opt out. And I don't think a lot of us can. No. So how the fuck are we all coping? Like, what are we going to do to make this better? Because it's not feeling good. Like, it's okay. Like, it's okay right
but
now.
But it's not great. And yeah. I've said this recently on the podcast, but it's like that gif of from Community of Donald Glover walking into the room and he's got the pizza. Then he quickly realizes everything's on fire. And that's how I feel every day on social media. But I remember being at like something like South by Southwest, like in, you know, the early 2010s, going to like a private secret Kanye West show and, you know, tweeting about it on Twitter and having the best conversations and feeling like, this is so cool. We're all at this party.
Yeah.
And it's just like, everyone's a Nazi.
Right. Yeah.
Just, which is like the worst fucking, yeah.
Log off.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with people becoming a little bit more digitally literate, which is the aim of a lot of these workshops that I'm hosting. I hope to encourage people, from programmers who are creating these tools to the everyday public who are using these tools, to think about what's possible with technology, to know it's possible, and to be able to hold these companies like Facebook, Twitter, Amazon accountable and responsible for creating a better future for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's incredibly not only noble, but just like essential. Like, we need that happening.
I think it's honestly one of the most fundamental issues, because when you think about it, the way we get our information these days is through social media. And that is such a terrifying, like, prospect, to think how these companies that are completely unregulated can do whatever they want to try to make a profit and dispense whatever information they want. So
yeah, there's no regulation.
It's we are in a way in a different sort of Wild West now, that we are living through vividly and rapidly, and we will look back on and probably be like, holy shit.
This is going to be a very interesting chapter in the history books in 50 or 100 years.
There are history books.
Yes. If there
the
is a
planet
world,
is alive.
Right. If there are people.
It's so easy to get cynical with this stuff. Like, that's what sucks. Like, it's really hard. It's easy to say, like, shit, this is so overwhelming. Everything's going to blow up. And I mostly feel that. But, I mean, I know, like, even from my experience within advertising and seeing, like, from the inside of the belly of the beast, from seeing the power and the money and the resources that are there, it's all possible to move that around. You just have to convince the right people.
Sure.
Or get in those positions of power. And so that's where I have a glimmer of hope from what I've been able to see from, like, my more, like, traditional advertising days.
Well, and I think Gen Z is going to go in there and be a lot, they're going to have a lot more moral kind of backbone.
I hope so. God, I hope so. Fucking knows. I mean, I don't know. Like, we always say that with other generations, like, oh, the younger generation is going to save us. Like, I hope so. But I also don't know if they are only exposed to, like, growing up on Facebook and thinking all of this is normal.
Right.
Like, I don't know. We have to do that work now.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is fascinating, and I would love to, man, just continue this conversation for like 5 hours, because social media is such a, like, I think everybody has such a strong opinion about it.
Yep.
But for you, if anybody watching, anybody listening, you know, they're younger, maybe they're starting out, maybe they look at what you're doing and where you are, the work you've done, and they want to become a producer, they want to become a YouTuber, they want to become a content creator, they want to work with brands, like, what advice would you give for anybody who's starting out or wants to get started in a similar path to what you're doing? Maybe that people, you know, look at what you're doing and they just think there's all these misconceptions about it.
I think, like, really think about what your values are and what you have to say. Like, that's always, for me, like, such a guiding force. If you're just trying to gain followers or, you know, I don't know. It's just, like, your motivation has to be different. And honestly, I don't know if that's, like, taught or, like, if that's innate.
No.
But for me, like, that's been something that my sort of sense of values has been my compass and gives me maybe a false sense of confidence to continue to make or take the risks that I do and to, like, go the non-conventional route, kind of. So I don't know. I think a lot of it has to do with becoming more digitally literate so that you can know how to make a difference. So you know how to be creative in a real way that is unlike what we're seeing right now. And to take a break from it all too sometimes.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's essential.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Take a break.
Yeah. Yeah. Anna Reset, there's so much we can cover. We talked already about, like, because a lot of times at the end of, like, the first interview, I'll be like, hey, mm-hmm. we should do a panel. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
But I think we should do a panel or a workshop or something, because obviously there's so much insight that you have to share that I think a lot of people could learn an incredible amount from.
Thank you. My experience is kind of different, I guess. I think, like, having the sort of perspective from an influencer point of view as well as somebody who was on the advertising point of view, like, it's given me some sort of different niche perspective that I do like talking about and learning from other people too.
I agree. I mean, when you mentioned the fact that doing these events, part of it is your own selfish kind of, like, not selfish, but like,
yeah, I mean, I'm here to learn. I like, right. I just want to make a space so that I can hear how other people are coping because I need that shit.
But that's why I do this podcast.
Right.
Because I'm like, oh my God, I get to pick the brains of like all the most interesting people who will answer my email. For me, that's just like, oh my God, it's like a little lottery every single week. So I love that kind of thing.
That's awesome.
This is incredible. What's the website where people can find what you're doing?
Well,
or what's the best platform for people to follow you on?
Unfortunately, Instagram. Anna Russet on Instagram. AnnaRusset.com is my website. It has all of my other links to social mm-hmm. media on there. But, you know, trying to find other places to go outside of social media. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I'll see you on TikTok, I guess.
Fuck.
Anna Reset, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
Up, starting
Thanks
the conversation.
For having me.
And I'm glad we were able to lock this in after conversation for such a long time.
Did it. Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcasts. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at dynastypodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.